This is hour three of the 9 to the Noon Show on this Friday morning, the 3rd of October. Just want to let you know a Donegal Pro Life gathering that was to have taken place in Letterkenny at lunchtime has been postponed as a result of the weather. Now, a very popular person out there this morning is Mr. Freddie Wilkie, who is retiring today. Lots of requests in, so just want to say, could you please play a special request for Freddie Wilkie, retiring from Donegal Creameries this weekend, a huge loss to the town and surrounding areas. Congratulations and thanks a mil for everything from Mickey Lynch and all at Tesco in Letterkenny. Also, wishing Freddie all the best from everyone at Mr. Chippy. I want to put in a request for my dear brother, Freddie, who's retiring today. Please play the fastest milkman in the Northwest. Now's the time to slow down and enjoy. Happy retirement. Love, Margot. So, Freddie, for the moment, your name officially is now Ernie, it would appear. Please play a special request for Freddie. He's, we've done that one. That's the Tesco one again. And all the best to Freddie. He will be missed. And another one, big congratulations to Freddie Wilkie, finishing up with Donegal Creameries after 44 years. That comes from Cuiva and from Joey. So, Freddie, all the best. Congratulations on a lengthy and very effective career. And you will, it seems quite clear, you will be missed. Also, people saying very good luck to the Highland Radio team who are on their way to Kilkenny today. Bring back the well-deserved awards. The IMRO Radio Awards are underway at the moment. Well, they're not underway. They're taking place this evening. And we have a huge squad going. I mean, there's basically a skeleton staff of about four people in this building at the moment, keeping everything together. All the best to, Greg's gone, Caroline's gone, Shannon's gone, and Oisín, of course, as well, is also nominated. Hey, happy days, and let's hope something really good comes out of this. Now, let's go to what is a very important issue, because tomorrow, Saturday, is World Stoma Day. Now, that's an issue which we all sort of have a vague notion of sort of what stoma is, but we mightn't be, 100% conversant. So let's speak to someone who knows exactly what stoma is and what the implications of stoma are. And that is Victoria Spillane. Victoria joins us. Victoria, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Very well. It's Donal, not Greg, I'm afraid. Greg's off in the car going Donal, to a party in Kilkenny. You're grand. It usually would be Greg, but he has other things in his mind at the moment. Victoria, you're with Crohn's and Colitis Ireland. And Crohn's and colitis, they're conditions that many people live with. And they're conditions which, to say the least, are highly uncomfortable and can be life-changing.
Absolutely, that's it. And what I always say is that inflammatory bowel disease, it's the umbrella term for Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. With Crohn's disease, it can affect anywhere from the mouth down to the back passage. Any of the digestive tract can be inflamed, ulcerated, bleed, and ulcerative colitis then is localised to the large intestine. Now, when I say localised, that makes it sound as if it's just a small area, but the large intestine is a very big piece of the anatomy. And with that, we're seeing a lot more people being diagnosed year on year with inflammatory bowel disease in Ireland. It's noted it's approximately around 50,000 people affected. However, I think it's a lot more than that. A lot more than that. Yeah. We just don't have a centralised database to actually get the exact numbers right now. And as a result of more people being diagnosed, we are then seeing more people requiring to have stoma surgery, whether it's to get a temporary stoma or a permanent stoma. So that's why we're just trying to create more awareness, more educational pieces and more resources for people living with IBD and stomas.
Now, just remind us what a stoma is.
So a stoma. So basically a stoma, the only way I can describe it is like the old pound coin. For anyone that remember the old pound mm-hmm. coin, it's about that size. And it could be I have a stoma myself and it's on the right hand side of my abdomen. Others might have it on the left hand side. Others might have it more in the middle. But the majority will have it on the right hand side. It's, as I said, around the size of a 1 pound coin. And it's kind of dark pink, red in colour. And that's actually the very bottom of your small intestine. So that's where they would have snipped away the large intestine from that particular part of the bowel. And it just protrudes slightly onto the abdomen. And then you fit a stoma bag over it. And that will actually collect the fecal matter then, or the waste matter from the body into the stoma bag.
Now, is this what we would also refer to as a colostomy bag, or is that different?
Colostomy bag is slightly different. So, but a lot of people, when I know, like mine is deemed an ileostomy bag because it's permanent and I have the entirety of my large intestine removed. But I still say colostomy bag to people at times because, just to Yeah, but a colostomy bag is slightly different because you might still have part of the large intestine there, but it's just that you then that it's almost giving the intestine a rest
Well, as I
there.
say, every day is a school day, because I would have always sort of equated a stoma and a colostomy bag, and it seems I'm not the only person that does that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, as you say, you have a stoma. I mean, let's talk about how debilitating this is or isn't, as the case may be, because I don't know you from Adam, but I'm looking at you, I'm looking at your demeanour, I'm looking at your smile, and I don't see a person in front of me who is in any way debilitated or who is in any way allowing this get in the way of a full life.
Oh, absolutely not. See, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease at 13. I'm now 40, and I was to actually have stoma surgery upon my diagnosis. I was so ill, but they stopped it at the last minute just to try to get me, to save the intestine. I was so young, but I always knew in the back of my head that that day would come, and it did when I was 25. So I actually have the bag now over 14 and a half years, and I call it Gynae after the store. Mighty Gynae, so the whole family backstory to it. So Gynae, that's what we call it.
That's Guinea, not Gynae. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, that's it. So Guinea, me and my gynae, and no, it completely saved my life. It was a life-saving surgery. I had a growth from the Crohn's disease that went undetected in scans, and it was only until they actually done the surgery that they found the growth and it was leaking. And they said another 2 weeks and I wouldn't have been here. So it was actual life-changing surgery. And to be honest, I have lived the quality of life that it gave me back. There was no more needing to plan out where toilets were on a journey. If I was driving from Cork to Dublin or wherever it might be, it just literally gave me my everything back. I've lived such a fulfilling life in the last 14 and a half years. There can be mechanical issues with it. You know, you can get the odd blockage or a leakage or skin issues, but you know, it's better than what the alternative would have been.
And well, the alternative, it seems, would have been not being here. Yes, absolutely, infinitely better than that alternative. But in terms of the management of it, and presumably the bag has to be emptied, and presumably, you know, is that the sort of thing you can just sort of discreetly nip into a loo in a building and do in 2 minutes, or is there a bit more to it than that?
There's when at the start, sure, I would have been going out with all supplies of all sorts. I would have been going out with about 10 spare bags and the whole lot. No, I don't. Now it's a case of if there's ways and means. That's the way that I say it. There's ways and means. So you can discreetly pop in. If I was badly, badly stuck, if I had a little plastic bag with me and I was in the car and I just felt it was after filling so much, and you know, but it's all these little knickknacks that you do, but that's the freedom that it gives you know. That you don't need to worry about having to rush into a toilet, which is what a lot of us who would have struggled a lot with IBD, that would be in our life for a long time.
And in terms of that management, and this is where I suspect a group like CCI Crohn's and Colitis Ireland comes in, because this is the sort of advice you can give someone who is newly diagnosed, perhaps is told, okay, you're going to have a stoma. Now, they're going to be looking at this and thinking, that's it, I can never play football again, I can never go to a disco again, I can certainly not do X, Y, and Z. And I suspect you're there to tell them, well, actually you can. You just need to know this and this little tip. And by the way, this is how I found this out. And you'll have tips that you can pass on and just ease people into this new life.
Absolutely, that's it. You, as I said, you absolutely can. Like what I always say, when you get a diagnosis of IBD, and say if you're told then that you need to have some surgery, it is a grieving process that people need to go through, you know, because the normal that one might have had life-wise is changing. You will have a new normal. And what we want to try to do at Crohn's Colitis Ireland is try to have you know, to provide a support to people, to help them get onto that level of acceptance, to for them to be able to feel that yes, I can actually go and live life. I can, and especially I think, especially for people that might be entering new relationships, how do they broach that, you know, that conversation with someone, etc. All of those little tips and tricks. That's what we're trying to achieve with our webinar tomorrow that we're going to do. Just living well with the stoma. Life doesn't end with a stoma, life begins with a stoma.
And the
That's
other
what
thing
we
is,
want.
it's very discreet. And I think sometimes people, maybe you think you've been in a hospital and you've seen someone with some form of a bag or something, you know, and you just have this idea in your head, oh my God, I look deformed. I won't look. I won't ever be able to sit down again. And the evidence in front of me suggests you will. But you know, people will be afraid of, you know, the size of this thing and what they have in their head. And I suspect what people have in their head as a vision is very, very different, to say the least, to the reality.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the thing. Sorry, no, I'm just going to plug in my laptop.
Oh, go for it. Oh, it happens to me every time I'm on a Zoom call, yeah, for whatever reason.
Okay, we're safe. So, no, it's that's the thing. And it's one of the things that people would have said to me when I got my own bag was, oh, when you go on holidays, what are you going to wear now when you go into the pool or go into the sea? And it's like, I'll wear my swimsuit, my normal two-piece swimsuit. Really? Really? And it's like, yeah, Gainey saved my life. He's part of me.
Hmm.
And it's a case of, and what I would have done actually for that very first holiday would have been, I actually got covers for the bag to match the swimsuits I was going to wear, all different colours. I don't go to that bother anymore. It was, and price, and cost. But when I was younger and it was like, oh, we kind of jazzed this up a bit.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, it can be as discreet. No one, even when my sister got married a few years ago, obviously everyone in my family knew, but there were some of her friends that might not have known, and they were shocked when they heard.
Mm.
Like, she actually is a bag. She's a stoma bag. I was wearing just a normal tight-fitting dress the whole lot, and no one else knew. So it can be as discreet, or you can, as people want, or you can put it out there as much as you want as well. But it's certainly, and especially the products nowadays, they are coming on leaps and bounds. There, you've got the companies Coloplast, Bibron, Hollister. The products themselves, the bags have come on so much. The feel of them, the size of them, they've kind of gotten a little bit smaller, if anything. So it's certainly, you know, you can be as proud as you want and have it on display in certain clothing, or you can cover it up. As I said, it's something where people don't know that people have it. So it's not something where, that's what I'd like for people to know as well, that yes, if you get one, you know, when you're walking down the road, down the street, people aren't going to be saying, oh my God, she, you know, they have a bag. Mm. People aren't going to know unless you tell them.
Yeah. Talk to us about the webinar tomorrow, because this is an important weekend, tomorrow being World Stoma Day.
Yes. So this year, this is our first year actually really marking it as big as we are this year. And hopefully next year we can go bigger and better again. But it's Breaking Barriers, Real Talk with Living with a Stoma. And it's going to, I'll be hosting it myself. We will have Terry Brannigan, who is going to be a patient advocate as well for living with a stoma. We have Aideen Stack, who is a health psychologist. She'll focus on the kind of emotional and mental well-being of living with a stoma. And Eileen Lim-June from Coloplast. She's a clinical nurse specialist, so she'll talk the practicalities. So it's going to be what I would call a fireside chat. We're not going to be by a fireside, unfortunately. We're all going to be in our own respective counties, but fireside chat in the sense that it's going to be informal. There's going to be no slides there that people need to be, you know, so people can be tuned in on their phone, walking around the house, doing whatever they might be in their cars. And it's going to cover all angles, basically, from information that might be there for people who could be pre-op, information for people that could be just on the brink of being told that they might need to have stoma surgery in the future, and those then post-op as well. So it's going to cover absolutely all angles, just to show people that you can live your best life when you have a stoma, and just try to break any stigma, shame, fears that people might have in build up to stoma surgery, or even that they might still be experiencing post stoma surgery. So it's just trying to break those barriers.
And do you want people to register and sign up, or can they just directly access the webinar and just attend?
It's a sign up. So it will be on the website, crohnscolitis.ie, and it's the events page, the events tab at the very top of the page. People can pop in their details, mm-hmm, and they'll get emailed the link. If anyone has any issues in doing so, I know the weather is causing all sorts of issues today, and they can just email in to info@crohnscolitis.ie, and I'll be happy to sign them up if needed.
And that's CROHNSCOLITIS.
Yes.
Well, we wish you all the best with it. You're a walking advert for the you know, having a life and a full life after a stoma. And it's been a pleasure. Victoria, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's take a few of your comments before we go to our next guest on Zoom. Good morning, Donal. On my way to work this morning, there are signs up on the Refour to Convoy Road for hedge cutting. Did these hedges not need cutting before today? Why are they being cut when there's a storm warning? There's a lot of hedge cutting going on at the moment, and I know this is seasonal because I know hedge cutting is actually banned, I think, during the summer months. It may be, I don't know the precise dates, but I think there's a ban on hedge cutting for a certain number of months. So there's a lot of hedge cutting going on at the moment. Why is there 10 or 15 big bus 16-seaters allowed to park in car parks on Ballybofey's main street? They're blocking all pay and display parks, and traffic warden and Gardaí are turning a blind eye. This is illegal. There are no licensed taxis in the town, so says a caller. With regards to the situation in the Middle East, Patrick says a large majority of people don't speak about Israel and Hamas as they're afraid to speak out. Hamas are a former terrorist organisation. If they were in Ireland, that would completely change our way of life. How can 20 people head out on a Mediterranean cruise and class it as humanitarian aid just because they're on a flotilla? Israel will look after these people medically and even pay for their flights home, yet these people want the Irish government to get involved. We hear from one side too much. Just because you're the loudest, it doesn't mean you're right. We were speaking earlier on about the presidential election campaign and the fact that a number of others, Maria Steen, Gareth Sheridan and others, didn't get onto the ballot paper. And I did make the point that processes were followed, and that would be the government's argument. Well, a caller says, processes may well have been followed by the letter, but these processes were tailored by successive governments to deny the people access to a totally independent presidential candidate. Another person, now, who are these people texting into your show, Donal, who believe Hamas started all this on October 7th? Do they not read history? It's the Israeli lobby alive and well in the current Irish government. We also spoke briefly about property tax earlier on, and a caller says, I bought an old house. We completely renovated ourselves at our leisure. We had it down to the block walls and revenue are looking now for nearly €1,000 for vacant home tax for the 2 years, as I didn't pay in time unless I can get contractors to do something up to confirm it was not habitable. We did not have the contractors doing any work, so I can't get them the information they're looking for, even though I have loads of photos with nothing in the house, so says a caller. Another caller wishing all the best to Freddie Wilkie, retiring from Donegal Creameries after 44 years. That's from Lauren, Darren, Ellie and Molly. In regards to Snapchat charging, the photo page Flickr charges when you reach a certain amount of photos, but if Facebook charge you for using it, would you still use it? No, is the answer. I suppose it depends on how much the monthly payments would be, but still, that's from Jared and Ballykelly. I'll give you an example. I used to use Photobucket online all the time. I used Photobucket. I found Photobucket a very good program. Photobucket started charging. I stopped using Photobucket. It's as simple as that. Well, nothing is really as simple as that, but that's the way that one panned out. And again, huge congratulations to the whole team at Highland on being nominated and shortlisted for 3 IMRO Awards. Well done, well deserved. Hope you win. And that's from Mary. And we hope so too. Now, let's go to Ballyliffin. Well, we're certainly going to North Inishowen because we're joined on Zoom this morning by Michael McLaughlin, who's going to speak to us about a very important event taking place in Ballyliffin over the coming days. Michael, a very good morning to you.
How are you doing, Donal? How's things?
Very well indeed. Doing the best. Michael, Film Festival taking place in Ballyliffin over the weekend. Hopefully the weather will not impact too much on proceedings. But Ballyliffin is establishing itself as a very important film destination and centre within the county.
It is. It's a result, I suppose, Donal, of the last 9 years of the event taking place here in Ballyliffin. It's hard to believe that, you know, 9 years have passed since our first outing in the village. And yeah, you're right. It's becoming a very important component on the cultural calendar, I suppose, of the county, number one. But also it now, you know, becomes an important part of a filmmaker's journey in terms of getting their work out and seen in front of an audience. So I know a lot of filmmakers nationally and some internationally as well now that you know, getting onto the and into the programme in Ballyliffin is something that they're striving for. So that's, I suppose, testament to how well we've run this event over the last 9 years and hopefully continue to do in the future.
I know Aidan and the crew at the Donegal Film Office are doing fantastic work, but it certainly seems to me that there's been a growth in the number of films being made in Donegal, both in terms of international people coming in, and we've seen the big ones, the Of Saints and Sinners with Liam Neeson and so on. But it seems to me what we're also seeing is locally grown filmmakers starting from the ground and making films within Donegal, about Donegal, with Donegal people. And there's no doubt in my mind that the Donegal Film Office and what's being done in Ballyliffin by people like yourselves is playing a huge part in that.
Yeah, so we're all just components, I suppose, in that drive for Donegal to become, first and foremost, I suppose, a location, because we have everything here. We have the scenery, you know, we have the cast and crew, we have the people, you know, the skill sets that are needed to pull sort of major productions off. But I suppose a lot of that starts with like smaller, you know, homegrown people getting a camera with up in front of a few mates and starting to film stuff. And then just watching that progression as they become more and more skilled and get into the bigger productions, as you mentioned, like, you know, the likes of Obituary, like a TV series that's done quite well. And we're proud to be having its world premiere of season 2 at the festival this year. But you definitely see the same names coming up again and again. We see them from short films at the very beginning, and then now you're seeing them on RTE as very skilled crew and personnel. So I suppose people need to buy into that, and are buying into that, that Donegal can provide everything, not just the scenery, but the crew and the cast required to make very high-end productions.
And I suppose it's stating the obvious to an extent, but the more productions you have, the more homegrown people you draw that will have the skills to assist those productions. And I suppose when a production team is looking at locations, if you can say to them, yes, we can give you X, we can give you Y, we can give you Z, and we have those on site, you don't have to bring them in, that's just going to make Donegal even more likely to get that commission, because the more you can make the director and the producer's life easy, the more likely they are to come to you.
100%. And there is a track record now, and there are a number of productions to look back on. So producers will be saying, well, who worked on Obituary? You know, who worked on Star Wars, for instance, when it was here? Who worked in Saints and Scholars? So Saints and Sinners. So there's definitely a track record for people to look back into the catalogue to see who are the people that worked on those productions. And then, it kind of is a self-populating thing then that, you know, more and more stuff will come into the county as a result.
I have to say, I absolutely loved Obituary season 1. My only gripe being that they completely airbrushed the Rory Gallagher statue out of Ballyshannon, which just looks completely wrong to me. But that said, as it was, that had to be done, obviously. But I thought Obituary season 1 was absolutely fantastic. Can't wait to see season 2. But as well as the premiere of season 2, what else is going to be shown at the festival over the course of the weekend?
So we have a jam-packed lineup again of work right across the weekend, starting this evening and actually starting at the earlier time of 6 o'clock. We normally would have our opening feature at 8 p.m. on the Friday night, but we've decided to do something different this year. We're just trying to, I suppose, extend the length of the festival. So we're very much a two-day festival. It's really Saturday and Sunday with one film on the Friday to kick things off, our opening feature presentation. But this year we're pulling that forward a little bit, and at 6 p.m. Tonight we are showing Fokla and Canvas, which is works on words on canvas in English. And it is a music documentary following David Keenan, who's a, you know, very well established a musician in Ireland, and just following, you know, his life over 500 days to kind of discover how musicians in this country work in a world of algorithms like Spotify and the likes, and how they're, the challenges that they get working on the live circuit in the country. So that is kicking off at 6 o'clock. We're very excited to have that as a new element to the program, and we have the director coming along to give a Q&A. Patty Hayes is going to do a Q&A at the end of that. So that's our first program of events. And then at 8 o'clock, as usual, we have our feature presentation, which is another Irish language film, partially Irish language film called Intus, which is Damien McCann's new film, which is imagined to be set in Donegal. So it looks like it is set in Donegal to all intents and purposes. And it is about a robbery of a credit union in the county. So it's a comedy drama, but it's, you know, well worth coming along to. And this will be the Donegal premiere of that. Then across the weekend, we have a jam-packed lineup, as I said, of feature films, of short films, animation, music videos, and really showcasing the best of work that is available in the industry in Ireland and internationally today.
How important is it that, as well as the opportunities through either cinemas or the terrestrial television stations, we now have the growth of streaming and we have the potential to get a film shown, be it on Netflix or be it on Amazon Prime or be it on wherever in the States or across Europe. And also, of course, we have YouTube. And there's far more opportunities for filmmakers to get their work out there. Anyone can put a film up on YouTube, so there's a way of getting the work out there. However, there's also a question of getting your work out there in a way that pays for the work and that monetizes the work and that makes sure that, you know, a filmmaker isn't a charity, a producer isn't a charitable case, and directors, actors, producers, etc. need payment for their work. Are we entering into a situation where it's a lot easier to have your work seen but a lot harder to get paid for it?
Yeah, I think so. And I suppose it depends on what stage of your filmmaking journey you are at. So for emerging filmmakers, of course, getting stuff up onto YouTube is important, and you have an immediate audience. And I suppose they'll very quickly tell you how good or how bad that piece of work is. And then, you know, that kind of feedback helps people to make their work, their next work better, I guess. Regarding the question of money, yeah, obviously, as you get into the likes of Netflix, you're getting into bigger. But I suppose there is a journey for a filmmaker, you know, starting with the likes of YouTube and then getting onto the likes of Disappear Here to film festivals, being part of that festival circuit journey. And then hopefully to be able to make a few quid on the back of it as they get into the likes of the streamers as well. Vimeo is another one that is now paying filmmakers for their work. So there are definitely a number of avenues, not just the big ones like Netflix. There's a number of online ones that do pay for content as well.
Is there one, Mubi, as it's called, which seems to be doing sort of art house films and more independent works that you mightn't see elsewhere?
Absolutely, and that's a really important part of the circuit as well. I suppose it just depends on what the audience is interested in, and there's quite specific avenues for that interest.
What's the future going to hold for the Ballyliffin Film Festival? It's operating as a showcase, and it's becoming a very important showcase. Could you see Ballyliffin getting into a sort of the sphere of awards, where a lot of film festivals will give out awards? And okay, we all know about Cannes, we all know about Venice, we all know about some of the big Sundance ones in the US. But I mean, there's a whole network of film festivals which are viewed as important within the industry. Do you see Ballyliffin becoming part of that sector where, you know, a film gets an award at Ballyliffin, that's going to create waves and that's going to get attention sort of across these islands and further afield?
Absolutely. I mean, we do have an award ceremony every year. We have an award. We have awards in every single category, from acting through to production, through to, you know, student work. So right across, I think we have 13 awards that we issue every year. We have big hopes for this festival. There's no question. The aspiration here is for this to be as big as any of the international festivals that are running around the world. You know, we're 9 years old. You know, Cork, for instance, is on next week. It's 60 years old. It's the oldest, I think 65 maybe. It's the oldest film festival in Ireland. So we've got quite a bit of catch up to do in terms of like how long we're on the scene. But, you know, be under no illusion, we have big aspirations for this to be mentioned in the same vein as the likes of South by Southwest or Tribeca or Cannes. And absolutely, why not? If we can get people to come to this neck of the woods, first and foremost, they will return. And I think as long as we continue to build on the success of it over the last few years, there's no reason why we couldn't be mentioned in the same vein as those.
Finally, if anyone wants to travel to Inishowen over the course of the next few days and actually go to one or more of the presentations, how can they go about that?
So the best thing to do is have a look at the website, which is disappearherefilmfest.com. The entire programme of work is available there. You can pay online, so the tickets are available online via that website if you wanted to get in advance of your travel. But also tickets will be available for all shows at the box office prior to the screening.
Yeah. Michael, looking forward to what's going to be a great weekend, I'm sure. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning, and we wish you and your colleagues all the best with it.
Thank you, Donald.
Take care, Michael. Time for a break. The Donegal Suffolk Sheep Breeders Show and Sale, which was to have taken place today in Raphoe-Mart, has been cancelled as a result of the impending weather. I just want to give a final mention to where Greg and Caroline and Shannon and many of the team are today. They're on the road. They're en route to the Lara Estate Hotel in Kilkenny, where the IMRO Radio Awards are taking place this evening. Greg and the 9 till noon show team are shortlisted in the Interactive Speech Programme category. Oisin Kelly is shortlisted for Sports Broadcaster of the Year, and the news team is shortlisted for Local Region News Programme, specifically linked to election coverage that took place at the general election toward the end of last year. And I stress, when I say the news team, I don't just mean the four people who read the news. I mean Greg as head of news and Caroline and the support team that worked with us over the course of that weekend. And if we win, the award shall be theirs as much as ours. Now, one Highland Radio staff member, so as I say, most of Highland Radio is on the road at the moment, en route to Kilkenny. There's another Highland Radio staff member who is not in studio today, but isn't on the road to Kilkenny. He's in Dublin for a very interesting reason. David James, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. You're partly right. I'm still back in studio today. What we're about to talk about actually happened on Wednesday.
Oh, it's been pre-recorded. Right. Okie doke. Well, that'll teach me to think up fancy intros. David, tonight is the Late Late Show country music programme. It's become one of the staples of the Late Late. And I'm delighted to confirm that David James has become one of the staples of that programme. You're on for 3 hours. You're on your third run on that particular programme tonight.
Yeah, and you know, it's always such a great honour to be invited onto that show, no matter what the capacity. Like the last couple of times I've been on there, I've been singing solo. Tonight, that's not the case. But it's still such a great honour to be invited on and play any part in the Late Late Show Country Music Special. And tonight is actually a fantastic show. There's some great guests on there. Priscilla Presley, who, of course, as we know, was married to Elvis Presley. She's on there and she gives the most fantastic interview. You're definitely going to want to see that. And then Hollywood actor John C. Reilly makes an appearance. He was actually a surprise guest. We didn't know that he was going to be there at all. And I'm a huge Step Brothers fan, so whenever he walked into the green room, my jaw hit the floor. I think it was the most starstruck I think I've ever been. But it turns out that John C. Reilly is a huge country music fan, loves country music, loves what we do here in Ireland, loves the American stuff. So he's there again, gives a fantastic interview, and might even sing a little verse of a country song as well.
Oh, look forward to that. That will be very interesting indeed. Can you give us a preview of what you'll be doing?
Yeah, so at the very top of the program, the entire cast is in there and we're all singing. And we're singing an old classic that everyone is going to know. And the exact same again at the end of the show. And the end of the show will be led by this year's inductee to the Country Music Hall of Fame. I can't say who received this award, but the person who did receive it is a very, very deserving recipient. And we're all delighted for that person as an industry. So, yeah, it's set to be an exciting show.
And I'm sure they'll all be very well known to the audience and to the listeners of your show in particular.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's great that RTE give us that platform. But also, you know, the country music special has really earned its place, because over the last number of years, it has shown its strength in with regards to ratings. It's always one of their top rated shows next to the Toy Show. So whilst it's great for them to give country music the platform, it's truly a deserved platform as well.
Brilliant. David, we really look forward to it. And I am delighted to confirm that I was wrong when I said that you wouldn't be doing your show today. Your listeners can look forward to your company between 2:30 and 5:00 this evening for the Jive Time. Bright and breezy as always. And then see you on the Gogglebox tonight in the country show. David, we'll see you a bit later on. And thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Donal.
Right, Donald. Okie doke, that's David James there appearing on the Late Late Country Music Show special tonight, and that will be a very interesting discussion indeed. Now, in the 10 minutes or so we have left, let's talk about Storm Amy and advice with regards to what to do. Joined by Killian Kelly from the RNLI, there is of course a marine sea warning in place, and as I understand it, the actual warning at sea is a red warning, which basically I would interpret as meaning don't go out there. Killian, good morning. Is that what you'd be saying?
Yes, a red warning is obviously the most severe warning we can get. We have a very, very dangerous system coming in with massive waves and a lot of wind behind it. So that particular combination coming into the coast will create very dangerous conditions all around the coast of County Donegal, indeed the whole northwest. The big risk for people that are near the coast is what I call a surge coming in. So if you're on a beach or a coastal path that you normally walk, and the sea is 200 metres away from you, a particular combination of waves and wind can actually push a surge up towards you and can catch people out very easily in those situations. So the advice there is to stay high and stay well back from it. There is a temptation in these big storms to go down, and we all like our photographs for Instagram and Facebook and the videos and all that, but you have to stay well back, stay a lot further back from the coast than you would think you would have to, because those surges can indeed be very dangerous.
And we have across the country seen a number of tragedies in recent years where people have been hill walking or coastal walking and they've been caught out like that, and they have actually been pulled into the sea and sadly lost.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, you know, as you're aware, we had a tragedy last weekend there in Donegal Bay. There, a fisherman from Killybegs, you know, lost his life. And the sea is dangerous on a good day, unfortunately, if you can get caught out. But it's just easier to get caught out in this bad weather. It's very, very dangerous levels of surf and wind. And, you know, the risks that people take, sometimes they think, well, I'll be okay because I know the path, or I'll be okay because, you know, I'm only going down the road. But not in a red weather warning. Stay well back from the coast.
And in terms of, I mean, your own colleagues in RNLI, I mean, we know you'll be there, the Coast Guard is there, and please God, no one does anything that might necessitate a call to the Coast Guard this evening. Let's hope that everyone just stays off the water today for the next 24 hours or so, and that you and your colleagues can spend the evening sitting in front of a fire watching David James on The Late Late Show.
Well, of course, but I mean, if you do see somebody in difficulty, whether inland or on the coast, you know, ring 999 or 112. I mean, some of our boats, like our boat that is stationed in Lough Swilly there, and our boat that is stationed in Arranmore, they're what we call all-weather boats, and those crew are trained to go out, but it is a risk.
Yeah.
It is definitely a risk.
Thank you very much indeed, Killian Kelly then from RNLI. So the warning is, I mean, as far as the marine is concerned, there's a red weather warning in place on the seas around. So please don't go to sea, and please stay well back if you're walking along the coast, because it's potentially very dangerous. Killian, thank you very much indeed. Brian Cannon is Director of Roads and Transportation with Donegal County Council. Now, Brian, we know that the National Emergency Team has been meeting today. There's been a briefing nationally, and then there's been local briefings as well. The warnings are in place, with the yellow warning coming into effect in about 7 minutes, and then the red warning coming into place, the orange warning, excuse me, coming into place at 2. You and your team are ready for this?
Yeah, Donal, we've been preparing since yesterday. There was the yellow rain warning in place yesterday as well, and we were pre-deploying sandbags at various locations around the county and ensuring that our stocks are all replenished in each of our depots. But yeah, today has really been focused on preparing for the onset of these high winds. And as you said, we've got quite a windy 24 hours and a wet 24 hours with a yellow rain warning coming back and from midnight tonight. It was very appropriate as well too, Donald, that you had the previous speaker on from the RNLA, given the red marine warning and the fact that Donegal has 1,100 kilometres of coast, much of it, or most all of it beautiful, but much of it exposed, and the need for the public to stay back, stay high and stay dry in relation to the coast. Back on land, Donal, we'll be closing the Harry Blaney Bridge from 2 o'clock today, just given the high winds. That's as a precaution, and that'll stay closed until at least 10 o'clock. But we'll keep that time under review, depending on how the winds are at that stage. But yeah, it's really about preparing now, ensuring that you know, we respond to issues as they arise. With the high winds, the trees generally still being in full leaf, there is obviously the potential for trees to come down to either block roads or to bring utility lines down with them. And I suppose the public need to be careful when it comes to fallen trees, that they could be intertangled with electricity lines and the danger that would bring. And obviously, if the public see fallen electricity lines, to contact DSB emergency services on their contact numbers, rather than trying to deal with that issue themselves.
a number of people contacting us asking about driving and asking, for instance, is it safe to drive from Dublin to Letterkenny this evening? Is it safe to drive around Donegal this evening? Now, the warning is orange, it's not red, and that's the difference maybe between now and Storm Éowyn. The warning at Storm Éowyn was up another level, and that was of a scale we hadn't seen in years. Presumably, you're ready for the worst, but you wouldn't be anticipating today will be as serious as Storm Éowyn was back at the start of the year.
We would hope not, and I suppose part of the national briefings, we would ask those types of questions from the Met Éireann colleagues, just in relation to the predictions. But yeah, we're preparing for an aftermath of a storm, and again, we all hope it won't be to the same level as Storm Éowyn. But I suppose people have to make decisions and travel, you know, themselves. What I would say is, in relation to Donegal, Map Alerter is a free text alert service that people can sign up to, and it's through that channel in particular that we will be issuing any alerts in relation to any road closures that would happen over the period of the storm. As I say, that's free, and also just to keep in touch on our social media platforms on Facebook and on X, those Map Alerter alerts are also repeated on those platforms.
And obviously we'll be keeping in touch with the council, with ESB and with others over the coming hours, just to get any news that out there. So Brian, for the moment, thank you very much indeed, and thanks to Killian before you as well. The message really, folks, is look, be careful out there, be cautious. It's an orange warning. It means be very careful. Road conditions should be by and large drivable, but as Brian said there, if there are road closures, they'll be well publicised in advance. Expect the unexpected. And I suppose, look, if you don't need to travel, probably look, if it might be a night to sit in front of the fire, as we said, and just relax and let the storm ride out. But for the moment, Brian, thank you very much indeed. Thanks to Killian, indeed. Thanks to everybody for their contribution here. And that was Brian there and Killian before him. Again, congratulations to Freddie Wilkie after a very successful, a long career with the Creamery. A well-deserved break beckons. And we've just been asked to mention that Rathmullen will again welcome teams of university students on the 10th to 12th of October. That's the weekend after this coming weekend, for a weekend of sailing team racing. Races commence at 10:15 on Saturday and start at around 9:45 on Sunday. Teams from all across the country will be taking part in this event on the water in Rathmullen. Thank you to all who took part in the programme this morning. All the best to the team who are in Kilkenny. Production was an interesting one. Caroline Orr planned the show. She was here for the first hour. Caroline is now on the road. Mark Gallagher has been producing for the past 2 hours and doing an admirable job. Mark, you might be talking yourself to another job there, the way things are going. Thank you to all our contributors. Most importantly, thank you to you for listening. John Breslin's up next around the Northwest.